I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, ready to deploy. U.S. forces are on alert as tensions in the Middle East reach a boiling point. Hurricane Helene. Amid the destruction in Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas, both presidential candidates are turning their attention to the affected areas. Plus, Full of Grace, an annual event focused on the rosary, is a resounding success. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Jerome. Our top story tonight, U.S. forces are being told to be ready to deploy as Iran vows revenge against Israel and its allies for the killing of Hassan Nasrallah, the longtime leader of Hezbollah. Meanwhile, powerful airstrikes continue to rock Beirut and other parts of Lebanon and Yemen. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with the latest. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Yes, the death of Nasrallah comes after more than a dozen deadly days of fighting between Israel and Hezbollah. We've learned tonight that Israel has informed the United States that it's planning a limited ground operation in Lebanon, an operation expected to be carried out very soon. Meanwhile, Republican leaders are calling out President Joe Biden, saying that this is the result of the U.S. removing sanctions on Iran, which backs Hezbollah.
This is a result of Iran running wild, having $80 billion of sanctions relief they used to build up Hamas and Hezbollah. Nobody in Israel is even talking to the Biden administration. The Biden administration is paralyzed by fear of Iran. In the name of not escalating, the world is on fire.
President Biden says his cabinet is working to de-escalate the situation.
Israel may be now launching a limited operation into Lebanon. Are you aware of that? Are you comfortable with their plan?
I'm more aware than you might know, and I'm comfortable with them stopping. We should have a ceasefire now.
However, Secretary of State Antony Blinken does admit the world is safer without the Hezbollah leader, calling him a brutal terrorist whose victims include Americans, Israelis, and others.
During his leadership of Hezbollah, the group terrorized people across the region and prevented Lebanon from fully moving forward as a country. Lebanon, the region, the world are safer without him.
CNN recently sat down with Iran's new president before the killing of the Hezbollah leader. He called on all Islamic countries to destroy Israel and its allies.
And we must not allow Israel to create another Gaza in Lebanon. This will not come from Hezbollah's hands alone. Hezbollah cannot stand alone against a country that is being backed by the United States and the Europeans.
Israel has vowed to do whatever it takes to ensure its citizens can return to their homes in the north, while Hezbollah has said that it will keep up its rocket attacks until there is a ceasefire in Gaza. But again, we've learned tonight that a ground assault by Israel is expected very soon. Meanwhile, the U.S. Embassy in Beirut, according to its statement on X, is working as quickly as possible to airline as many U.S. citizens out of Lebanon as quickly as possible. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, back here in the U.S., President Joe Biden says that he is praying for the victims of Hurricane Helene. He declared disasters in over a half a dozen states and says he plans to visit the impacted area later this week. He tells storm victims the federal government will remain on the scene as long as it takes.
Not just a catastrophic storm, it's a historic, history-making storm. The entire Southeast and Appalachia. Damage from the hurricane stretches across at least 10 states.
Hurricane Helene flooded coastal areas of Florida before dumping record-setting rain in areas like North Carolina.
This storm has exceeded the flooding that we've ever seen historically in this area. The rivers crested higher than they ever have on record.
The storm washed out roads and left people without power and cell service. Survivors say their towns are unrecognizable.
And it's just really horrifying. It's sad because there's still people there that are really hard to get to, and we're really worried about all the people that are still there.
There's been reports of over 100 dead and consequence of this storm, and there are reports of up 600 people unaccounted for because they can't be contacted. God willing, they're alive.
Even though Florida took the first hit, it's helping with rescues farther north.
We understand the storm had impacts far beyond our borders, and it's impacting Floridians in the North Carolina and Tennessee mountains. So we launched this weekend Operation Blue Ridge.
Thousands of utility crews are also working to restore power. And the Federal Emergency Management Agency announced Food for the Poor will deliver 5 pallets of hygiene kits to Catholic charities in St. Petersburg and Tampa, Florida. Vice President Kamala Harris traveled back to D.C. today to get an update on the hurricane recovery. She also plans to visit and see the storm damage firsthand. Former President Donald Trump is already there. He made a special trip to Georgia this afternoon.
Yeah, but we're here today to stand in complete solidarity with the people of Georgia and with all of those suffering in the terrible aftermath of Hurricane Helene.
Former President Trump was also asked about tomorrow night's vice presidential debate. He says his running mate, J.D. Vance, is going to do great. Vice President Kamala Harris is also cheering on her running mate, Governor Tim Walz, and she continues to challenge Trump to another debate.
I think he should debate again. The American people have a right to hear us discuss the issues. And as you say here in Las Vegas, I'm all in.
Meanwhile, Trump made waves over the weekend for calling Harris mentally impaired and blasted her handling of the southern border.
And if you think about it, only a mentally disabled person could have allowed this to happen to our country.
Democratic Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker ripped on Trump for name-calling, but Republican Senator Lindsey Graham still calls Harris a crazy liberal because she supports Medicare for all and the Green New Deal. And for more on tomorrow night's VP debate, let's bring in Christopher Devine, political science professor at the University of Dayton and author of the book Do Running Mates Matter? Professor Devine, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. So tell us, how important is tomorrow night's debate, and how much does it matter when it comes to voters, when they decide upon their presidential pick, like your book says, do running mates really matter?
Tracy, thank you for having me on. Thanks for the question. You know, the VP debate, its effect is a lot like the effect of VPs in general, that they matter. The VPs matter. The debate matters. But it's not front and center for voters. They're mainly choosing between presidential candidates. I know that seems obvious, but when you think about it, people will say, well, you know, J.D. Vance, he's pretty unpopular. He's about, 10% negative in terms of favorability, which is quite low for a vice presidential candidate. Tim Walz is slightly popular. You might think, well, people will vote for one ticket or against another because of the VP candidates. Well, most people don't do that. They don't do it either because that running mate comes from some group that they belong to, a religious group, a demographic group, a geographic group. That generally doesn't happen. They matter in terms of shaping how we think of the presidential candidates. We as voters know that Donald Trump could have chosen basically any Republican for his running mate. Kamala Harris could have chosen basically any Democrat. They picked Trump, picked Vance. Harris picked Walz. Let's see how they perform. That'll tell us something about the judgment of Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. It might tell us also something about their policy views, their priorities, given what it is that these folks will emphasize. So I think voters will get some insight into the choice they have between Trump and Harris from this debate, even if those two aren't going to be on the stage.
Yeah, and folks do need to know a little bit more about them. Vance, on the other hand, has been in the public eye a little bit longer than Governor Walz, at least on the national stage. Do you think, Christopher, is that an advantage for him or a disadvantage?
Vance has been in the broader national conversation for longer because of his book in 2016, Hillbilly Elegy, of course, a best-selling memoir, later turned into a movie. But as far as politics goes, he's really only been on the scene for a few years, building up to his 2022 Senate run, where he won a very tough Republican primary in the state of Ohio, my home state of Ohio, and then won a pretty tough general election against Democrat Tim Ryan. But Tim Walz has been in politics a lot longer. He's been doing these debates and campaign appearances for quite a long time, ever since 2006, when he first ran for Congress, and then in 2018 and again in 2022, ran for governor successfully in the state of Minnesota. So they have different levels of experience. J.D. Vance has a little more experience on the national scene, but when it comes to politics and events tomorrow, Tim Walz actually has more experience.
Yeah, and what do you think Walz needs to do tomorrow to appeal to the voters nationally?
To J.D. Vance?
Governor Walz.
Governor Walz. I'm sorry, cut out for a second. What does Governor Walz have to do? Governor Walz has to really be critical of the Trump policies, the past Trump administration, a future Trump administration, while also making a positive case for a Harris administration. We saw some insights into what a Harris administration would look like based on the last debate on September 10th. But, you know, there was a lot of other stuff going on in that debate and maybe wasn't as focused on policy. I think there are a lot of blanks that Tim Walz can fill in to tell people not just why they should be against Donald Trump, but why they should be for Kamala Harris. Also, by the way, introducing him to voters and saying why he would be a good vice president. A lot of people don't know much about him. He has some biography to fill in, as does J.D. Vance.
Yeah, and really quickly, almost out of time here, but what are you hoping to see and hear from the candidates tomorrow?
I think we're all hoping to hear more substance. Again, there was substance in the last debate, but it got overshadowed, especially the, you know, cats and dogs stuff that really took over the conversation. I think a lot of people would like to find out more about where these folks stand on economic policy, on foreign policy, on education, all kinds of things. That would be really valuable to voters as they make a decision, hopefully based on the merits of the two candidates.
We're going to leave it right there. Professor Devine, great to be with you. Thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tracy.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including pro-life push, a closer look at Idaho's first-in-the-nation measures regarding adoption. Draw closer to the November elections. One state is reflecting on its success, passing pro-life measures. Earlier this year, Idaho Governor Brad Little signed three pro-adoption measures. The bills were developed by the pro-adoption group Unplanned Good. The laws decrease costs for future adoptive parents, provide support for birth mothers, and bring education to students from middle school through college level on the option of adoption. Idaho is the first state in the nation to sign pro-adoption bills. And for more, we turn to Terry Markroff, Executive Director of Unplanned Good and an adoptive mother. Terry, great to have you on this show. So much to get to, but first, I want to talk about you and why you started Unplanned Good. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Hi, Tracy. Thank you for asking. So my husband and I had a really beautiful adoption experience with our newborn daughter. And because our adoption experience was such a so seamless, it really baffled me when my friends had a hard time adopting. And so they faced infertility, tried to adopt, it just wasn't possible. And that baffled me because there are so many women facing unplanned pregnancy in this country, almost 3 million a year, that I had to look into that. And when I found out that less than 1% of them choose adoption, I thought we have to do something about that. We can bring that number up.
Yeah, definitely. Now, let's talk about those measures in Idaho. What exactly do they say, and what's been the response so far?
So the Idaho response has been just fabulous. People are very receptive to giving women another alternative so that they can still choose life, even if they don't want to choose parenting. And so the education bill specifically that we passed calls for any Idaho State School from sixth grade up through college, if they're talking in health class or sex education class about contraceptive or STDs, they will also now educate women about adoption, because a lot of them don't choose it just because they don't understand it. And so that's in up through high school that it's included in those classes. And then in the college, if the students go to the medical centers and they're dispensing contraception or testing for STDs, the college also needs to hand out information about adoption.
That's so important. You know, as we talked about, this is the first state, Idaho is the first state to pass pro-adoption bills. Why do you think none existed before, Terry? And are there any other states that may be considering measures like this?
Yes, there are other states that are considering measures like this. I just talked with Oregon last week, and then we're getting it on the agenda for California as well, and then Idaho. But I had the opportunity to talk to a bunch of lawmakers about this over the summer, so it's really hard to say who's going to take that information and introduce it in their next session. But we're hoping that it's really replicated well. I've made templates available of the legislation of the final bills, and just invite any state who wants to promote adoption, especially as an alternative to abortion, they can use our templates and get something through their legislator pretty easily, I think.
That's wonderful. We're almost out of time, but I want to ask, you know, what's next for your organization? And if people want to find out more information about it, where can they go?
So what's next for us is that last year was so beautiful in the legislature. We're going to do that again. I'm getting ready for the next session of the Idaho legislature to open, and we have 6 new bills on the plan. So we'll see what happens with those, but some of them are very exciting. And then how people get in touch with us, you can find us at unplanned.org, which has a whole lot of resources about adoption, funding adoptions, finding the right woman to work with in your adoption, and then contacting us to have your stories posted, because that's one of the most important pieces of education for young women, to hear the stories of other women who've chosen adoption. So all of that's at unplanned.org.
That is wonderful. It is so important. And Terry, thank you so much for speaking with us and all that you're doing. We really appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you so much, Tracy.
Well, a right-wing party is the big winner in elections over the weekend in Austria. This after voters said that they were angry at the two mainstream parties that have mostly governed the country since the end of World War II. Supporters of the Freedom Party celebrate the initial election results. Its candidates sounded the alarm on immigration and inflation, adding that they will take the majority Catholic country in a new direction. But the future remains unclear. The Freedom Party did not gain enough votes for a majority and must form a coalition with one or two other groups. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, safe at home. Well, Francis is back from his trip to Luxembourg and Belgium. We have the highlights. Plus, why the Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage was such a massive success. We'll tell you all about it. Breaking tonight, a judge in Georgia has struck down the state's pro-life measure banning abortion at 6 weeks. The ruling says that women should have the freedom to make decisions about their own bodies. The law had been approved in 2022. Well, Pope Francis is back in Rome following his trip to Luxembourg and Belgium. Before departing Brussels, the Holy Father urged all members of the church to speak out against clergy sexual abuse and to find the voice of the Spirit speaking in the victims. During Mass before 40,000 people in Brussels, the Holy Father reminded the faithful that the community of believers is not a select group of privileged few. Instead, it is a family of those who are saved. It was the final main event of a trip that drew plenty of attention. And joining us now from Rome is Andrea Gagliarducci, EWTN Vatican analyst. Andrea, always good to see you. So can you tell us more about the Mass and the Pope's words about the scandal of clergy sexual abuse?
Well, you know that the Pope added a series of off-script remarks about the sex abuse scandal. We know that in Belgium, the sex abuse scandal was a huge issue. There is also a bishop, Van Geluwe, that has been recently laicized because guilty of abuse. The bishops had 2 commissions. And actually, the Pope was already preparing a meeting with the survivors that happened on the Friday night. But while he was meeting with the authorities of Belgium first time, there was a very, very strong speech from the Prime Minister of Belgium, and then also a mention on the abuse cases by the King of Belgium. And so the Pope already, in the speech with the authorities, he added these remarks that became a sort of leitmotiv for the trip, that is about that the abuses must not be covered up, that that the Pope will always look for the guilt, and that, you know, the Church had to apologize because of the abuse. And this has been the leitmotiv of the trip. It came back during the Mass, the final Mass. It came back also in the press in the in-flight press conference.
And overall, now that Pope Francis has returned from Belgium and Luxembourg, what are some of the highlights of the apostolic journey?
Well, I would say one of the biggest highlights is the veneration of Pope Francis of the tomb of King Baudouin in Belgium. It's a big issue because King Baudouin was the king who, in 1990, self-suspended not to ratify and sign the law on abortion. And the Pope called all the Belgian people to look after the example of Baudouin and already announced that he's going to open the beatification cause of the king, which was a huge thing for Belgium. In Luxembourg, it was pretty interesting, the meeting with the authorities, because the Pope proposed Luxembourg and Europe as a model for peace.
And Andrea, as he typically does, the Pope spoke to the media on the return flight to Rome. It's been getting a lot of attention, too. Tell us what the Holy Father had to say.
Well, there were a series of topics. I already mentioned the topic of the abuse and the Pope that said that we have to be ashamed of the cover-up. I already mentioned King Baudouin and his stance on abortion. But there was also an issue with the Louvain University. The Pope mostly went to Belgium to celebrate the 600th anniversary of the Louvain University, that is a Catholic university in Belgium, but now very well known for the progressive stances. And this university protested after the Pope's speech in the French part. The university split into a Dutch and the French part, in Flemish and French part. And there was a statement that said that the university disagreed with Pope Francis' view on the role of the woman in the church, because he presented the woman just like a mother and a generational bearer and so on and on. But the Pope actually reacted very strongly, also inferring that there was a sort of stubbornness or, let's say, close-mindedness in the statement, because he said he always valued the woman, but the woman need not to be machized, let's say that it's used a strange word in Italian. And in general, he said that, the Marian ministry is more important in his view than Petrine ministry, and whoever does not recognize it, he doesn't see the church, and the church is always woman. So despite the ministry, and the Petrine ministry said is functional, is administrative somehow, Mary is more important in his view.
Well, Andrea, thank you so much for this report. Always appreciate it. Andrea Galliaducea, EWTN Vatican analyst. Thank you again. Now, finally tonight, an annual event at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception was a massive success. As we previewed here on EWTN News Nightly, the 2024 Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage took place on Saturday. Thousands of the faithful gathered for the rally at the National Shrine, followed by a mass and a concert. The event kicked off the month of October, which the church dedicates to the Rosary. Beautiful. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.